No, what I
Okay.
mean is like having two masters, I think now I should, or I want to do something else, not necessarily, repeating the same thing. Because what I experienced was full of beauty, and in many aspects, I really enjoyed my time, both in Costa Rica and also in the Philippines. I love the people, I love the food, I love the countries, both in both countries, the cultures, everything's beautiful. But that's why, I shouldn't stay in a comfort zone there forever. I should do something to kind of like, keep moving on.
Hey there. Welcome to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. This is my podcast about Japan, but it's not just your run-of-the-mill, cool Japan podcast. I want to explore a side of Japan besides sushi and sumo, anime, and video games. I'm here to extrapolate and meditate with the local people that your travel guide probably doesn't touch on. People that are hungry for making it, and people that have made it. This podcast is my talks with them. Heyo! Welcome back to Made in Japan podcast, dear listeners. It is awesome to hear some of the feedback I get, whether it's through social media or an email. I love hearing the feedback that people really actually enjoy listening to my crazy laughter and voice. And loving to hear what they get from the guests that I speak with. So, yeah, once again, I seriously can't repeat myself that much. But I have to. Thank you so much for listening and making this podcast worthwhile. Thank you. Thank you. We are back again to this episode. First off, Made in Japan podcast is a donation-based podcast. If you are really loving what you're listening to and you would love to help donate to the production and also to the drinks for my guests, please visit ko-fi.com/Made in Japan podcast. That's ko-fi.com/Made in Japan podcast. All the donations are 100 based, going towards straight into the production and the beverages for my guest of this podcast. So thank you, thank you, thank you if you have donated. Now, as most of you know, my guests who are on this podcast are usually people who have been living in Japan and have made it or are, struggling to make it in this country. However, this week is a little bit special. It's this special guest this week is someone who is making a difference outside of Japan and has come back to Japan just in time before the pandemic outbreak hit. I fortunately met her through Clubhouse, and now that she's back in Japan, it was great to have her share her life story. We are going to be talking to Yumi Takano. Yumi is, wow, I don't know what other word to describe Yumi except she is a badass. And she, to me, is the bright and shining light for the future generations of Japan, the future generations that are going to make a difference and that will represent their country to the best of their ability. And Yumi has been basically a global student that's been traveling all around the world and, trying to study and focus on peace and conflict and what can we do to help out these major world conflicts in the world? And, I can't speak for her. So let me just continue on with this episode and let her share her story. But wow, all I gotta say is, what a badass. That's the best word to describe her.
And it's so cool to hear her and being a representation of her peers, her Japanese peers that are going to be making a difference for the future. So, yes, without further ado, let's bring on Yumi Takano, a global polyglot and a person who is an alumni for University for Peace. And without further ado, here we go.
How's it going today?
Very well. Thank you so much for asking. And how about yourself?
I'm actually super tired.
Why? What happened?
I had a long day. I had a busy day working. But no, I'm pretty excited to have you on. I have to say, to be honest, you are kind of like my first late night guest. And by late night, meaning after 7 p.m., that's late for me.
I guess I'm old.
No. Yeah, it's already 9 o'clock, so yeah.
Okay. Now,
sorry. But like,
thank you for coming on. Now, let's get real. My first question for you, Yumi, is I've been seeing your Instagram. I notice a lot of like beach pictures. I hear a lot of like ukulele from you. Mm-hmm. So, are you the type of lady that likes to sing to their partner, or do you want your partner to sing to you?
Oh, well, okay, that's a tough question. I would say I'd rather sing by myself.
Wow, okay.
Perhaps someone else, but also to myself, you know, to kind of like express my emotions or what I've been through and kind of process my feelings as well. Yeah.
Yeah, because I noticed you on your, I just started following you on Instagram and I noticed like you sing very well.
Aww.
With like ocean waves and like tropical setting going on. Yeah. I'm like, I'm feeling the vibes. I'm feeling the island vibes, you know. I'm an island boy, so I know. I get that. So I always love to ask that question, like people who like have lived in the islands, like,
do you like to sing to someone else or do you like to have someone sing for you? So it just shows a lot of your personality. But that is not the main reason why I have you on, though, is because, you know, we met through Clubhouse.
Yeah, right.
And your story is really fascinating to me.
Oh, you're so kind.
Because like,
you know, most of my guests now are usually people that are, you know, in Japan and then sharing their success stories or their passions. But you're the lady that's like said, hey, I got something to prove outside this, you know,
Japan. So
I think let's go from there. I want to go start with, where did that passion start from? Like, let's talk about how you had that fire to go travel.
Go abroad, right?
Yeah.
So, right. So until my high school time, I was in Japan. I lived in Japan until then. But then one day at the school, in a class, I saw how one teacher could make such a, you know, impact, kind of like put a lot of influence on students' mindset, how you know, powerful teachers were. And in that case, that specific case, that was quite negative. I saw how teachers' voice easily influence people, students' ideas. And I found it quite scary, because then later on, when I asked my friends, so some other students, right, why they think in a specific way after the discussion in class, they were like, it's just how it is, you know, teacher said that too. It's just how it is. And I was like, no, it shouldn't be that way. I mean, it's okay that you have the idea, you have the, you know, voice, but you need to have the reason for it, right? So I found it quite scary and a little bit uncomfortable be in such environment. And I wanted to make sure that my university life will be full of discoveries of myself, kind of trying to get out of my comfort zone. Because I'm quite sure that I was also one of those, you know, one of them that just following the, you know, kind of like waves, not necessarily having the, you know, specific reason why I support something, why I don't support something, but then just, you know, but then I feel, you know, it's just how it is. No question. And I didn't like it. So
were you always the adventurous type? Like when you were a kid, like, were you always like, I gotta go. Yes. I gotta like, see you guys later. I'm going to go this way.
Yeah. I have a very short story for that though. When I first visited beach in Japan, and that was the first time I saw a, you know, kind of like an ocean to swim, you know, where people can swim. And until then, I never swam in the ocean. But then when my family and I got there, I just immediately jumped in without knowing how to swim.
I was like, yeah, swim. Jellyfish, I don't care.
It's just how, yeah, that happened. So my mom, for instance, she already knew that, you know, I wouldn't be necessarily someone who would stay at home and, you know, be waiting for something to happen, but rather I just go, you know, space diving.
was your hometown away from the seaside? Like, where did you grow up?
My hometown is not necessarily directly. Oh, okay. You know, located right next to the ocean, but not too far from the ocean. So, yeah, we just happened to be there and that happened. But anyway,
okay.
To continue my story. So then I decided to go to Australia because I found a university where I could study peace and conflict studies, which I was quite fascinated to, you know, to do. For my master degree, for my bachelor degree.
Let's rewind back. Peace and conflict.
That's something, you know, most people choose like economics.
Oh yeah.
Or like business or like, yeah. like
that's something I would think about like as a graduate program, you know, like, but maybe that's just me. I don't know. But like, where did that spark come from? Like, why were you thinking about peace and economics? Where did that start?
Oh, that was peace and conflict. It is.
Oh, peace. Sorry. Peace and conflict. Sorry.
No worries. But I guess, well, my school, the school that I went, in Japan, that was 6 years private school. And I think I was quite fortunate enough to go to UK for, I think, about three or four times. And also visiting New York and Boston in the United States.
Nice.
So when I saw the poverty issue in the UK when I visited, and also when we had a chance to go to visit the UN headquarters in New York, it was a kind of like a turning point where I really felt there was something, you know, the reason I was there, that I had chance to go to, you know, to these places and in the UK, and also thinking about how poverty issues or other issues in Japan, it's not necessarily visible in Japan, not really, but there's certainly issues like that, you know. So I started thinking about it, and then I felt, well, because, you know, I was quite fortunate enough to do whatever I kind of wanted until high school time too, and go to the private school and, you know, these opportunities. So I kind of had a feeling that I was meant to do something positive for this world, to this world, and also the people. It sounds, you know, a little bit cliche, like a butterfly, but
yeah.
You know, I really felt that now maybe I should start preparing for kind of like giving back to the world, to the people, because I'm.
What age was this? When
were you thinking like this?
16, maybe.
Wow.
Something.
Man, for me, 16 was like, Mom, Dad, I hate you. I'm leaving this house.
The moment too, but you know that happens. Like for girls, that happened quite early time. So you know, I just passed it already.
You graduated from that.
Yeah, I've already been there.
Okay.
I guess for guys, we're a little bit slower.
So we're just like,
wait a second. I don't
no
need
offense,
my parents.
No offense.
Okay, so yeah, you were really thinking really globally at a 16-year-old. Okay, that's...
Maybe, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, okay.
So you had that mindset. You were traveling. You went to the UK. You went to the States.
Yes.
You had that impression from the UN. So you're like, all right, peace and conflict. Let's do this.
It just happened.
Like,
okay,
that's something I needed to do, and okay, poof, voila, and that happens.
And then, boom, you're in Australia.
Yeah, I was in Australia, and I loved it. I loved it so much. Yeah.
Talk about that university. So, I think most people don't know this because I tried to research. I did some research about it. University for Peace, is that the college, or was that later?
That's later. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Costa Rica. Yes.
Okay. So, okay. Okay.
Going back.
Yeah.
I'm skipping a lot.
So yeah, in Australia, I went to a university called the University of Queensland.
Okay.
Yes. And I studied peace and conflict studies. That was my extended major, and my minor was Spanish language. Yeah. And.
So, oh, but Spanish my Spanish as well.
Is not that good, so no. Okay, don't okay. Really, yeah, take that all into right. Consideration. Anyways, but yeah, and during my time at UQ, the university, UQ, I had a chance to join the exchange program in Mexico for one semester. Well, I had two options. Whether to do the whole year program, so two semesters, or one semester. But if I did two semesters, then that means that I would not be able to join the graduation, attend the graduation ceremony in Australia, and I didn't want that happen. So I was like, okay, then just one semester. So I was in Mexico for one semester. Mm-hmm.
In the semester in Mexico, what type of program is supposed? What is it supposed to be about? Like, what are you supposed to be learning?
Right.
In that program.
So yes. So mainly, I took classes related to human rights, and also environmental issues under sort of like peace and conflict studies, or a little bit similar to international relations. I also joined an international negotiation class, which I really enjoyed.
Wow, okay.
And I did two internships as well.
Mm-hmm. Where is this in Mexico? Which area?
Puebla.
Puebla, okay.
Yeah, like 1 hour away from Mexico City, I guess.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I often hear Japanese living in Australia, doing their study abroad programs. It's very rare for me to hear young Japanese to do their, you know, study abroad in Mexico. So what was your experience like? Because I'm pretty sure it's very different from the Australia, right?
Quite different. Like, yeah. Quite different. But I would say both. Well, I really enjoyed time both in Mexico and also in Australia. People were really chilled. In Australia, people are laid back, more like a beach style, you know?
Yumi style.
Oh.
With a ukulele.
right. But people in Mexico, they are chilled more in a, you know, like a family style. Maybe a little bit like in the Philippines, or like a family, you know, you're really welcome as a family member. And they even invite you to their special occasions, like their grandma's birthday party or, you know, weddings or,
We have an expression,
you know, in the Philippines as well. Once you're in the family, you are really in the family.
Like,
there's no escaping it.
But all of us. No, I'm joking. But well, I also encountered some, you know, uncomfortable situations in Mexico too. But I would still say that can happen anywhere in the world. Even in Japan, people think that, even Japanese, right? We think Japan's so safe. But of course, there are certain corners you shouldn't necessarily, you know, go. Yeah. And you also need to be careful with who you're going to, where, and then when, and what to bring, and all that kind of stuff. So I would say my experience in Mexico was quite nice. Really, really nice. Beautiful place to visit. Full of nature and colors. So many colors, I would say. People just...
The food?
Food is good. Really good. Yeah. Well, I had food poison.
How does what? As well? Yeah, food poisoning? Yeah.
Yeah, food poisoning. So for 3 weeks-ish, I was suffering quite a lot from that. But then later on, my friends, they took me to a doctor, and I got, how do you say, like a infusion, German. Sorry. Vaccination?
Wait, what food did you eat last? Not sure,
from the street.
Was it like a taquiera? Like, was it a taco truck or?
Something like that, I guess.
No.
I'm like, let's try, you know. No. I was like, oof, I was dying.
Right. Oh no. But
I needed to skip some classes because of that. But
right.
Yeah, now it's my memory.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so. Yeah.
A premier source of English information and lifestyle content for people living in and wanting to find more about Tokyo. Go check out Tokyo Weekender. You can find out more information on tokyoweekender.com. You can subscribe to their newsletter, download their mobile app, or if you are walking out and about in Tokyo, check out one of their free print publications. That's Tokyo Weekender magazine. Find out more at tokyoweekender.com. Established in 1970, it's the oldest English publication in Japan.
So after Mexico, you came back to Australia?
Yes.
Right.
And then I did my final semester, then graduation.
Okay.
Okay. And then next step was?
Germany.
Wow. Like, you are just the traveler. I love it.
So you were in Australia and you were studying a bit of Spanish, and then you went to Mexico.
Yeah.
Hanging out in Puebla.
Yeah.
You know, the streets of Puebla, and then learning the life there, going back, graduating, and you're just like, all of a sudden, Germany.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, yes. So, So that was back in 2015 when I was graduating from the university in Australia. And that was when I was taking another human rights course in Australia after Mexico. And I saw how Australia as a country was reacting to the situation, like human crisis in the Middle East. And that was not, you know, pleasing at all. They were literally not welcoming even one refugee to land on their country, their territory, right? And then I needed to think about how Japan has been doing too. We are doing horrible when it comes
Can you explain about that? Like, what do you mean horrible?
I want to know.
So a while ago though, Japan opened up the border for refugee in order to kind of like protect them. But then the regulations were not necessarily strict. So not only people who literally need the protection, human rights, you know, protection, but people who are seeking economic, how do you say, profits, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Advantage, like yep. economic migrants, right? They mm-hmm. also came in together, but they mm. their status was refugee, although they were mm. not necessarily refugees. So right. Japan as a country, so Japanese government perceived it, they were not necessarily happy about it, right? So therefore, they, what is it, like restricted?
Yeah, much more restricted, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, the regulation. And now, even you have the right to apply for asylum as an asylum seeker, it takes so much process to apply. And also, most of the materials that you need to fill in are in Japanese, but then they don't have people who can help them with Japanese language. They yeah. don't know where to live, you know, where to stay while they are applying for the asylum seeker status, and also the refugee, you know, as a status for the refugee. So it just takes so much time to finish all these application process. And most of the times, because of this, and also because they also don't know where exactly they need to go and that kind of stuff too. So most of the times they take too much time, so they overstay, and mm-hmm. then they are now, you know, what is the word?
Like considered like an illegal
alien, exactly. kind of, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is a big thing that happens a lot in Japan, you know, especially with, you know, even for foreigners that are working here,
they also have that
problem. But
it's even worse
for those people that you're talking about, these refugees. They don't have that opportunity. And I see you're very concerned about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I saw how Germany was, you know, showing the leadership, opening up the border and, you know, really providing them a shelter and food and a place where they can learn German language, where they can, to get, you know, necessary skills or like all these things, in a specific institution or so. So I was really impressed. And then I thought, okay, maybe there's something I can do now after studying, you know, peace and conflict studies. Because while I was studying peace and conflict studies, I was also feeling guilty, like me saying, oh, I'm studying peace and conflict studies, but not necessarily helping out the people, not necessarily be part of the solution to anything. Mm. And I was feeling a bit of guilty, therefore. Yeah. So I thought, okay, then maybe let's see, you know, how things are going in Germany and if there's anything I can do when it comes to refugee protection, maybe I can do something. And also I wanted to learn German language sometime, like, you know, once in a lifetime. It just, I wanted to learn German language. So
you were talking about that. Like, I was just wondering, like, why were you so like, you know, you're so motivated to learn the German language.
I don't know. It's just so romantic. It's so beautiful. I don't know why. Well, French and like other languages are also beautiful. But
yeah,
I felt really comfortable hearing it. Huh. And yeah, and I felt that, you know, somehow I needed to go to Germany. And most of the times that's what happens. When I'm making a big decision in life, of course, I think a lot. I reconsider, you know, over and over again. But then after all, I just know that something is there and I just need to go there. And I know that that's the right thing for me to do. So that's what happened. And I just went to Germany after that. And yeah, that's what I did too. I stayed there for almost 2 years, I guess.
So So after Australia, just immediately go to Germany. Where in Germany did you stay and study?
Yeah, in
southern, where in Germany?
Mm-hmm, in southern Germany, called Tübingen.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether you've heard of Stuttgart. Stuttgart.
Oh my gosh, Stuttgart! I had many clients, students, in Japanese companies.
Managers,
mid-level managers, or even administrators. There's a lot of Japanese companies setting up offices in Stuttgart. I've never been there, but I feel like it's like there's like a little like little Japan
yeah.
in Stuttgart.
yeah.
Is it true?
Well, yes, I would say Stuttgart is one of them in Germany. But yeah. I would say Düsseldorf is
they. Düsseldorf. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
There's a really big Japanese community as well. Düsseldorf,
that's crazy.
Maybe a little bit in Munich.
Munich, yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit like in Frankfurt.
Wow.
Frankfurt. Yeah. And maybe then Stuttgart.
Did you go all over Germany? Did you visit all these cities?
Well, many of them, yes. I guess so. I think I traveled quite a lot. I didn't really count, but I visited.
Okay.
Yeah.
which place was your favorite? Which city or which place was your favorite place in Germany?
I think where I lived in Tübingen.
Stuttgart. Oh, Tübingen. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Stuttgart is, let's say, 1 hour-ish away from where I lived in Tübingen.
Okay.
Yeah. Tübingen was, you know, a really pretty, like a university town, I would say, but not necessarily only students are there, of course.
Okay.
But still, it's not like, I think it was in Heidelberg. You know, that's a really university town. But Tübingen, I would say people are quite chilled, but not like in Australia or in Mexico, but Germans, like a chilled Germans.
I don't know what a chilled German looks like.
Like you're using the chill in Australia and Mexico. And I'm trying so hard, Yumiko, to imagine a chill German.
Bless my German friends. I love them all. But a chill German.
I love Germany.
I know. It sounds like you do.
I'm trying to picture like a chill German. Like, what is a chill German besides hanging out at the bar drinking beer?
Okay, imagine. But this is a true story, though. Imagine Germans in summer, they make a long queue just to get an ice cream.
That sounds like Japanese waiting for a ramen.
But that's what I mean, like a chill German, you know?
Literally chilled.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just found it so cute. German people, they make such a long line just to get an ice cream. And that's something that I rarely see. You know, Germans do not necessarily queue. What I mean is they wouldn't go mad into something. That's what I felt personally.
Yumi, you've been outside of your countries too long, because there's some Japanese here that would wait for long lines just for two slices of pancake. Like,
sorry,
pancake.
Yes, Japanese.
Or like a donut. Or like you've been out of this country too long, Yumiko.
Japanese are another level. You know, this country, Japan, is like another planet for me.
Yeah.
That's what I literally feel, you know. It's just from many aspects.
Right,
this is another, like, not necessarily country, another planet. So Japan is out of the consideration.
So it's just
no comparison, no. You can't compare to Japan, no.
But yeah.
I get it. You love Germany and you love like the people there. And
yeah,
that is awesome. Totally. But why did you leave? Why did you leave Germany?
Oh, right. Oh, because I've kind of already reached the advanced level of German language. And if I, you know, wanted to stay longer, then I needed to get, you know, get a job in Germany or maybe do my master's in Germany or so. Mm-hmm. And then that time, so I think it was 2 weeks before my visa expiration, I found a program which I eventually joined. That was, you know, dual master program, which was fully sponsored. So I didn't need to pay for tuition fees, flight, living fees, visa. A visa, I'm not so sure, but almost everything was covered.
Sure.
And I wouldn't, I will not need to pay back to them. And why I was attracted by the program is because if I attend the program, if I join the program, I will be able to study at the university where I wanted to study, which was in Costa Rica. That was the one you mentioned. Yes.
The other side of the world.
Yes, exactly. And then one of the best universities in the Philippines as well, Ateneo, no? So, cool.
Mabuhay, Filipinas.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yes, so amazing. I was like, okay, but, you know, I only had 2 weeks to apply. Yeah. And thanks to, you know, I don't know what happened, but anyway, the deadline was extended when I found it. I was like, okay, then maybe, you know, I have a hope, you know, I have hope to, you know, just give a try. So yeah, I asked some of my professors to write me a recommendation, and, you know, I started gathering all the stuff that I thought I would never need to touch again, like ever again. And yeah, and then that happened, you know, I was accepted to the program, so I joined it.
Wow.
And so I'm guessing, like, the acceptance rate to enter this program is not so high. Like, I think it's, I feel like I was checking up on the University for Peace. It seems like they're very selective. Like, they choose very specific types of people to enter their program.
Positively, yeah. But I can't really say anything because I really don't know their criteria. And also my program, it's called Asian Peace Theater Scholarship, APS program. Mm. And that was open for, I think, 30 people maximum. All over Asia. And I thought people who are not grown up with English as their mother tongue, they have to. Well, that's one of the criterias. You can apply to the program.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how was that experience for you with University for Peace?
Really, really.
You look like you want to do it again.
Oh no, I think once is good. You know,
once is good.
Yeah, I mean, no, what I mean is, like, having two masters, I think now I should, or I want to do something else, not necessarily, you know, repeating the same thing. Because what I experienced was full of beauty, and I in many aspects I really enjoyed my time both in Costa Rica and also in the Philippines. I love the people, I love the food, I love the countries, you know, both in both countries, the cultures, everything's beautiful. But that's why, you know, I shouldn't stay in a comfort zone however, you know. I should do something to kind of, like, you know, keep moving on.
I'm actually curious, with your class or your program, like, what is the ratio? Like, how many Japanese people were in it? Or like, you know, I want to know what types of ethnicities and backgrounds. I'm curious of, like, the diversity of this program.
Yes. Thanks for asking that question. So APS program that was founded by a Japanese NGO. So I think half of them were Japanese. Mm-hmm. So 30, half out of 30, right? So like 15-ish mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. were supposed to be Japanese, but then some of them dropped out, not necessarily only Japanese, but from other nationalities too. During the program, they dropped out. So I'm not sure how many of us eventually, I didn't count, so I don't know. But yeah, supposedly half was supposed to be Japanese. And okay. the rest were from, let's say, Cambodia, Philippines, of course.
Yeah.
Philippines, Cambodia, Laos, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, Thailand. Where else? Oh, Myanmar.
Wow. So a lot of like Southeast Asian countries.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Yeah. That's a great diversity.
Yeah. But then dynamics were changed when we were in Costa Rica at the university called UPS. University for Peace.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think the majority was US Americans, I think. US Americans and then Europeans, then Asians. But there we had people from other programs joining the course at the University in Costa Rica too. So we had like Central Asian students as well. Middle Eastern we didn't have, at least you know, in our badge I don't think we had any of them. Some students were from Africa regions, and many of them were from Cameroon. I think that's the dynamics. And gender, speaking of gender, the majority was women, the female students.
Wow. Yeah. All the lionesses, they rule the world. All of you rule the women. World. I love it.
Yes. Very inspiring people, both men, women.
That's amazing.
Whoever it was, everyone was just so inspirational.
And I'm just imagining, you know, all of you guys are like, you're all of, most of you are English speakers, you know, English is a second language
speakers, right?
But I'm guessing a lot of you are very multilingual. Like, I'm guessing a lot of you speak not just English and your native language.
Yeah, I'm guessing
most people speak another language as well, right?
Some, yes, but not all of them. Yeah,
okay.
Some people speak English, and I mean, from our program, do you mean like APS?
Okay. Yeah, APS, yes.
Yeah, APS, okay. Yeah, some students speak their mother tongue in English, and I think that's it. And some of us, we spoke three or four languages, but it really depends.
Yeah. Right.
But what is the lingua franca in your group? Like, what are you guys speaking mostly together? English?
In English, yeah.
Okay.
And it was so interesting because even with Japanese classmates, I was speaking in English.
That's cool.
It's because, you know, sometimes even though you are speaking in your mother tongue with people who also speak the language, sometimes someone just pops up, you know, and they just want to, you know, join the conversation, but sometimes you know, they'll be left out, and some of us, we didn't want that to happen. So from the very beginning, when it was in open space, we were speaking, then we choose to speak in English so that anyone feel welcome to join the conversation too.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even you are speaking in your language, when you see someone's coming and maybe the person wants to join, then, you know, you just switch the language.
Man.
That is an amazing experience for you, Yumiko.
Like,
okay, you went from Australia to Mexico, Germany, Costa Rica, and then Philippines. And then after the Philippines, you finally came back to Japan?
Yes. Finally. Like, after
So wow, like, and when did you come back? What can I ask when
was
of
that?
Of course, that was the end of 2019, right before the outbreak.
Right before the outbreak. Wow.
It was like after 3 weeks or 2 weeks since I arrived in Japan, then massive outbreak of COVID-19. So
yeah,
I was like, oof, you know, better or worse again.
You know? I just think you have a very long streak of good luck. I think you just
you have like a great charm, and you're just like
running around like, okay,
yeah,
gotta go back in Japan now.
Woo! Oh, whew, I'm safe back home. Gotta stay home.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Wow.
Thankful.
Well,
thankful.
How was your year last year? Then I want to know. Well, that's probably something for the audience to, maybe they would wonder, like, you've been spending 8 years abroad.
Mm-hmm. And you come back to your home country, Japan.
Yes.
What was it like? Like, what, I mean, 8 years is a long time, Yumi.
Quite a long time, eh? Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right? So, like, when you came back, like, what was, you know, let's get rid of the whole pandemic and the outbreak. I want to know your personal experience. Like, what was it like for you coming back?
It was really strange in a way that, you know, how I lived, you know, with my guts and my feelings and all that kind of stuff was perhaps, you know, not necessarily fit into the culture here in Japan. But I'm not necessarily dissing, you know. It's just...
No, no.
It's just, you know... sometimes you just need to follow what people say, although it's not necessarily efficient or anything, or doesn't necessarily make you happy. But
did you find yourself feeling difficult to speak Japanese?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Because when I left Japan, that was when I was 18, I guess, you know, I was speaking like high school girl, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
マジで?マジで?
そうそうそう 本当マジで?なんで? とかでしょ?
めっちゃかっこいいね!
So, you know, and when I was abroad, I kind of like minimized my usage of Japanese language because I wanted to improve the language that I was speaking or, you know, spoken in the culture or the region it was spoken. So, so it was, of course, I could communicate with people in Japanese, but it's really different, you know, when you come back with your certain, you know, your certain age and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
At your certain age. And then if you're speaking like, you know, high school student, you're like, oh, you know, yeah.
Did you get that face like from other people? They look at you and they're like,
No, it's just I felt like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm so ashamed, but I can't really help.
It's weird that you
shouldn't feel ashamed. You know what I mean? Like
I was feeling really bad and embarrassed. Embarrassed for myself and the world and the family and But anyways, so there were moments, a few months, I tried finding excuses why I can't speak fluent Japanese, like business level or, you know, elegant Japanese.
Sure.
But then I was really tired. I found myself quite tiring finding excuses for that because, you know, it shouldn't be that way. I mean, if you are not comfortable with it, then you should work on it, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, you mean no more excuses. And I started watching the news in Japanese. Well, I was already watching news, but, you know, more intensely, kind of. really try to pick up some words, phrases, or from the news articles. And also I read many books in Japanese, and also I did Google search. I used Google search how to write proper emails, like business emails, like so many times. I was like, wow, I'm spending so much time for this. Because in English, you know, you can just write back in the second. Yeah. And in Japanese, you spend like a week or something. Like, is
right,
this
right. It's like,
is this not?
In English, it's like, thanks, got it.
Yeah.
Talk to you later, right?
Everything's cool.
And then, like, Japanese, like, well, we must give the background information first. Uh-huh.
You know, maybe you talk about the weather first and ask them how they're doing.
Apologies for your you know, taking up your time.
Exactly. Apologies for interrupting, you know.
Of course, you apologize for everything. Yeah. For your existence too. I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah. No, sorry, Japanese people. I was joking.
No, you're not. This is real talk. This is real talk.
Don't say that now.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But anyways, so yeah.
I'm sorry. I just said that. I'm like, oh,
okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, and, man. Yeah, so I also bought some books, actually, yeah, like literally to learn some vocabs, phrases in business, you know, in business like occasions. And I studied a lot. I even wrote some essays just for myself to learn Japanese. So, because, I mean, it's not open for anyone, you know, just for myself, kind of, you know, try to improve my Japanese level. So, yeah, that's how I studied Japanese.
Again. Wow. So, but did it take a while to adjust?
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So
I want to know now, what are you doing these days? Now, you know, I'm sure everyone's life has seriously adjusted during the pandemic.
And
I'm just kind of curious, what are you up to? Like, you know, you've got all this experience abroad. What are you doing now?
Mm-hmm. Right. So when I came back to Japan, there were a few months I was thinking, you know, maybe I can work for, well, no, it's not like I can, like I may want to work for the government, or I may want to work for the UN, or, you know, I was thinking in a, I would say just for my personal experience though, more like in a narrowed perspectives. I thought because I studied this, because I did that, I should go this way. But then I was feeling quite uncomfortable thinking that, well, that might be an option too, you know, but it's just, I felt it's not necessarily for me, at least for now, my age. I don't know why, I just felt it, that it's not meant for me. Then I started really thinking about what I really, really want, you know, what my heart tells me to do. And then later on, I found out that with my sister, I have two elder sisters, by the way, and so the second sister, she is working at the kindergarten, and with her specialization and my specialization, more like peace and conflict studies, environmental studies and that kind of things, and her specializations, you know, to kind of, you know, turn aliens into human beings, that responsibility. In a sweet way, in a very sweet way, because I perceive that's a really responsible job, you know, because that creates a foundation as a human being, right? And we wish to launch our own nursery.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay.
We really want to do that. So we are working on it together.
Cool.
And yeah, we feel like it's going to happen.
You have all these like 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds starting to learn German,
Japanese, English, and Spanish, Tagalog.
We want children to feel, it's so normal. I mean, it's totally, it can be normal to be surrounded by the topics in terms of social issues, global issues, any global issues, you know, environmental issues or other kind of, you know, the things and issues that adults tend to talk about, only adults tend to talk about. But that can be also, you know, discussed or, you know, at least kind of touched in the, you know, in the environment where maybe 3-year-old or 5-year-old right. children are there. Not necessarily, you know, brainwash them, but really make them to, like, kind of allow them to know what's happening. Not necessarily, you know, force, like, pushing them to think in a certain way or, you know, because...
Exposure.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. We want them to be exposed to these kind of experiences, the environment. So, yeah.
That is awesome. And this is still ongoing, this project
with you and your sister. That's awesome. Yes. Very cool.
And day by day, it's becoming more and more realistic.
That's so cool.
It's really cool.
Yumi, like, you are a blast to talk to, and we're going to talk more maybe like now and in Clubhouse. I think I wish you the best with you and your sister with the
project that you're doing.
Thank you.
And
I will say this, Japan is super lucky to have you coming back. I really
believe.
I'm really seeing more and more of not exactly like you, Yumiko, but like I see more and more younger people who went out overseas, gathered their experiences and coming back and like making a difference. And I can see that potential in you. And that's probably, no, not probably. That's the reason why I reached out to
talk to you about this, because, you know,
part of this, although my podcast is really about people living and working in Japan, but like, and the name of my podcast is Made in Japan, but you are made in Japan. Like that's the deal. And that's the real talk. This is a side that most of my listeners don't know about. You know, people come to Japan to visit, they're attracted to the otaku culture or the, you know, something that the Western culture or the Western society, they make a romantic image of Japan, but it's the people like you, and I'm so blessed that I have an opportunity to meet you, and you know, I think that's why I think Clubhouse is amazing,
because like
people like you to come back and then do what you're doing well, and yeah, I wish you all the best, and shit, man, if we can ever meet up face to face, let me buy you a pint. Maybe
it's a German lager. Maybe it's a
Mexican tequila.
Sweet.
Maybe it's a Filipino San Miguel. Maybe it's a, I don't know, it's a Costa Rican drink there. Some Costa Rican
beer. Everything combined, you know.
In a major cocktail. Mm-hmm.
Why not? Going wild. But yeah, I truly appreciate your time and this opportunity. Yeah. You know, I'm really, really thankful. Mm-hmm. It was such a, you know, bless. I was really feeling thankful. I'm really thankful that I could, you know, speak with you in this way as well. So thank you so much.
And for the listeners and for the people out in the audience listening to this, I'm going to post like links to the program that you went, University Peace.
University for Peace. Yeah.
For Peace. I'm going to post that link on the show notes for this episode, so
people can be
interested about what's going on. But like, yeah, we're going to talk soon for sure, Yumi.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Yumi. And then, yeah, take care. We'll talk more soon.
Yeah. Okay. My pleasure.
Okay.
See you later. Thank you.
Bye.
Ciao.
You can find Yumi on her Instagram handle, which is at Yumi_the_Greenie, GREENIE. That's one more time, at Yumi_the_Greenie.
Also, if you happen to be a fan and an active user at Clubhouse, Yumi is very active on Clubhouse. You can find her there. Her Clubhouse handle is at YumiTKN. That's at YUMITKN. If you do happen to follow her and listen to her chat, she's got a lot to say. It's just so great. And I've seen her being in chat rooms that are in German or English or Spanish. Yeah, she is, as I said before, she's a badass. You're listening to Made in Japan podcast, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. If you like what you are hearing, please feel free to leave a comment or, you know, leave some rating and reviews on Apple Music or on Spotify. Or you can, you know, hit me up on my Instagram and my Facebook. My handle is at Made in Japan Podcast. That's at Made in Japan Podcast. Also, feel free to email me for any questions, comments, or if you have a guest that you would like me to interview, please email me at japanmademepodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, it's pretty cool to hear the voices of my listeners, and it's just so cool. Also, for me too, when I have the chance, I am on Clubhouse. Once again, my handle on Clubhouse is at Made in Japan Pod. So yeah, that is all for this week. It's just so cool to meet all these guests, and like Yumi, you know, feel free to check out all her things that she's got to say. Also, as I said before in the episode, I will put the link for her school that she went to, the University for Peace, and I'm going to post a link of the scholarship program, the Asian Peace Builders Scholarship Program, on the episode notes. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you soon in the near future. Be well and peace out.